if we decide to cede leadership to, say, China, for example, we're not going to do AVs in the U.S. for now. We're just going to, like, put this all on pause while China proceeds. When we decide that we want AVs 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now, policymakers finally decide, oh, we need this, we will not have the supply chain in the United States to support that industry. We will be reliant, like we are right now in the electric vehicle space, on the Chinese supply chains. And so that's the part of this competitiveness argument that makes me nervous and why I think we really need to get this policy landscape figured out for competitiveness reasons.
All right. Hello and welcome to the Mobility Podcast. This is Greg Rogers, founder of Aries Public Policy, and I'm joined by my co-host.
Hello, I'm Sophie Jantz. I'm also a public policy professional and urbanist.
And we are recording on site at the 12th edition of TRB's Automated Road Transportation Symposium, ARTS, we'll just call it, in San Francisco. And we're thrilled to welcome our friend Hillary Kane, who is Vice President of Technology, Innovation, and Mobility Policy. That's a title.
At the
Alliance for Automotive Innovation. Hillary's been on before, so it's nice to see you. Nice to have you back on the podcast, Hillary.
Yeah, it's good to be here again.
Yeah, so it's before we jump into the discussion, though, I want to start with what's now our first question asking guests, which is, what is your transportation story? Why do you do what you do?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I've been working now on sort of future mobility, transportation policy now for about a decade, with a primary focus on autonomous vehicles. And for me, it's because I have a mother who is a wheelchair user, and I have experienced firsthand the challenges that she faces in getting to where she needs to go, whether it's a medical appointment, out to see friends, even go grocery shopping. So for me, this is about my commitment to this technology is about finding mobility options for people like my mom who have to rely on others to get them around.
Yeah, I love that. And especially, you know, it's, I think I've said this before on the podcast, it is interesting that, there's such a massive opportunity to improve mobility for obviously our parents and our grandparents. And one of the first moments of breakthrough in getting my folks to understand what I do is they saw a segment on, like, I don't know, Good Morning America or something years ago. And they said, oh, we saw that autonomous vehicles can drive for us after you take the keys away. And we're like, yeah, that's kind of the whole bit here. But not the whole thing. So last time we had you on, you were at Toyota.
Right.
And since then, you moved over to the Alliance for Automotive Innovation. So let's just start with, could you tell us a little bit about the Alliance?
Yeah, sure.
Or so, innovators?
Yeah, exactly. So the Alliance for Automotive Innovation, or Auto Innovators for short, was formed in January of 2020. It was actually a merger of two preceding organizations that represented the auto industry. So there was the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers and the Association of Global Automakers, and they came together under one roof. That roof is the Alliance for Automotive Innovation. So we essentially represent the auto industry here in the United States, but we also have a membership that expands beyond just the automakers. So we also represent automotive suppliers and technology companies that are working in the automotive space, including a number of AV startups.
Yeah. And you've had a pretty massive expansion of membership recently.
Yeah,
it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and I mean, it's intentional, not just because, you know, more members makes you more powerful. That's not what this is about. It's about a recognition that the future of mobility is going to involve players other than the automakers, right? That this is an ecosystem approach, right? It's gonna, and so in recognition of like that, we wanted to make sure our association represented the auto industry as it's going to look tomorrow, and not just the auto industry as it looked before.
Yeah. So let's just dive into federal AV policy, because we've both been working on AV policy for a long time. We were in the trenches together on self-drive AV start years and years ago. Where do you feel like federal policy is today versus, let's say, back when we had you on, I think in 2018?
Yeah, so the bad news, right, is that not much has changed, right? So we're still trying to get a federal AV bill through Congress. We are still looking to the U.S. Department of Transportation to finish updating its existing motor vehicle safety standards to accommodate AVs. So a lot of still, we're not in much of a different position than we were a number of years ago. I will say earlier today, there was an announcement about some work at NHTSA that we are excited about at Auto Innovators. This is this morning, Acting Administrator Carlson announced the AV STEP program as a new exemption pathway for AVs to deploy at a higher scale or a greater scale than they've been allowed to deploy so far. So we're pretty enthusiastic about that. It seems to us at least there's some innovative new thinking coming out of the department and maybe some serious thought being given to how we can sort of get out of this like trough of disillusionment or whatever that we're in right now. So that's exciting. But other than that, we're still, there's a lot of pieces that still need to come together to give us this federal regulatory framework we've been seeking now for many, many years.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was really excited to hear about this discussion of launching STEP because we've already seen the slow pace of reviewing and approving exemptions. You know, Cruise has been waiting for a long time. Many other manufacturers waited for a long time. And with how exemptions are currently done, you're limited to up to 2,500 vehicles per manufacturer. So there's obviously some friction that's created when we're looking at, okay, one of the biggest opportunities with AVs is rethinking vehicle design.
Right.
How we use vehicles, whether they're built for shared rides, whether they're built for delivering goods more efficiently, whatever it is. And it feels like that is, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's one of the most tremendous opportunities with AVs, just challenging what the conception of a car is.
Sure.
And how we use it. Do you see, and so looking at what's happening on the Hill, I mean, do you see opportunity for forward progress this year or in the coming years? What do you think it takes to move this forward?
Yeah, I wish I knew. And you know, to be honest with you, I've been working on this stuff for you know 12 years or so, and I start to question my effectiveness, right? Because we're 12 years into this, we still haven't gotten to where
maybe you're just preserving your job security.
Right? I don't know, but. I wish I knew the answer. I mean, and you know, we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording. But yeah, you know, I'm honestly very concerned about where we are from a federal and state policy landscape right now. I'm very cognizant that we're at a fragile time for the AV industry. That where we are in terms of the economy, there just isn't the same cash flow that there was a few years ago, and companies are at a really critical stage in their maturity, and they need to be able to deploy this technology in a commercially viable way. And right now, we do not have policy at the federal or state level that allows that to happen. And I think we're at there's a very significant risk that we will see the funding dry up for these companies. We've already seen it in some cases, and that these companies will go belly under. And it's not, or belly up, but it's not because the technology isn't mature. I am blown away at the progress that some of these companies have made in a short period of time and the capabilities of the technology. I am more optimistic about the technology and its capabilities today than I've ever been. And maybe least optimistic I've ever been in the ability of the government to do what it needs to do to allow this industry to flourish and this technology to get onto the roads and the scale it needs to get onto the roads to make a difference.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, it's funny because 5 years ago, what we were saying was that we need to start working this regulatory framework because it's going to take some time to do. If you look at the timelines that were on self-drive, AV Start, for example, we would be done with a good number of these rulemakings, ideally at this point, and we'd have a little bit more certainty. But the fact that this has dragged on for, you know, years and years and years, we've seen little forward progress. While at the same time, yeah, it is incredible the technological progress we've seen. And, you know, I think that it's easy to criticize some of the rosy projections that were given, you know, 5-10 years ago.
Sure.
But we are at, you know, what feels like a big inflection point for not just moving the technology forward generally, but for the U.S.'s global leadership in 100%. Developing and maintaining it.
Yeah.
And we're seeing this, I think, really across the board. And it honestly feels like it feels like a big lost opportunity for the U.S. that we're dragging on. Well, it seems
right. So the competitiveness thing is a really compelling argument here. And I want to dig into it for a second, because I think sometimes this is framed as just, well, we don't want China to have it and us not to have it. But I think it's way more significant than that. And I think we have lessons that we can learn from the semiconductor shortage crisis we went through a few years ago, and lessons that we can learn from what we're experiencing right now in the electric vehicle space, which is the countries that lead on this technology will develop and maintain the supply chains for this technology into the future. Mm-hmm. So if we decide to cede leadership to, say, China, for example, we're not going to do AVs in the U.S. for now. We're just going to put this all on pause while China proceeds. When we decide that we want AVs 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now, policymakers finally decide, oh, we need this, we will not have the supply chain in the United States to support that industry. We will be reliant, like we are right now in the electric vehicle space, on the Chinese supply chains. And so that's the part of this competitiveness argument that makes me nervous, and why I think we really need to get this policy landscape figured out for competitiveness reasons.
Yeah, I mean, that really resonates with me, because especially when you look at what happened on the EV side. I mean, I was the crazy person walking around the Hill 5 years ago when I was at SAFE, telling members of Congress and senators how important critical minerals are. And I felt like eyes were glazing over and they were thinking about what they're going to have for lunch. And now it's one of our biggest questions.
Yeah,
and this isn't just about transportation. It's not just about transportation when it comes down to critical minerals. It's everything else in the economy, really. And I think you're right that when it comes down to AVs and the future of AVs, we need to think about the fact that being in the pole position with this technology means that we are also able to unlock all the benefits of that for onshoring and investing in our domestic capacity, but also making sure that our values and our principles as a country are embedded in this technology,
sure.
Right? The automobile is the symbol of freedom in the U.S., or it was for a long time, right? And I think in many ways it still is. We want to preserve that idea of freedom of movement.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I'll also say, too, right, so there is no doubt in my mind, and I think in the mind of auto innovators, that the future of transportation is automated and electrified, right? And so if that's the future of the auto industry, and right now the U.S. auto industry, like the auto industry in the U.S. is a leader on, or has been a leader, at least on the sort of the safety and advanced sort of safety technology side of things. And I really want that, that expertise and that leadership to still stay within the auto industry here in the U.S. and not cede that leadership as well. The auto industry in the U.S. employs, 10 million people and is, 5% of GDP. And I think we all have a really strong national security interest in keeping an economic security interest in keeping that.
Yeah. I think this is kind of leading into one of the other questions that we had for you, which is, you lead policy at Auto Innovators, and Auto Innovators represents the collective of the automakers in the industry, their policy views. So why is it important that these companies that are in many ways directly competing with each other collaborate on policy development?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I mean, it's always not so pretty, right? Because certainly we see from time to time individual companies trying to use policy to create competitive advantages and disadvantages from themselves. But at the end of the day, what drives us and what drives our companies and why I think collaboration on policy is so important is it's really about setting a level playing field and creating a policy landscape that allows, all companies, whatever their, sort of business models and plans are, to flourish. And there is absolutely interest across the entire industry right now, including among the leaders and in the laggards, I would say, on AV policy to make sure that there is a clear federal framework in place that allows for this technology to move forward, right? And it's just it's that level playing field, right? The level playing field that allows all boats to rise. I'm mixing my metaphors now, but you know what I mean. So there's absolutely a strong commitment throughout the industry to working together to get this right.
So Hillary, one thing that I've noticed is that, you know, we're starting to see more tension between the federal government and state governments in terms of regulating AVs. How would you think through reconciling some of the confusion or maybe the conflicts between them?
Yeah, you know, and it's definitely something that seems to be more consistently there, but I feel like it's bubbling up to the surface again in sort of a more significant way of late. So the way I've been thinking about this is, you know, we've sort of got three different things that are coming together to make an AV, right? Like we've got the vehicle itself. We've got the operation of that vehicle on public roadways, and then we've got the driver, right? Like this is sort of how you can think about vehicle and operational sort of regulation generally. And traditionally, the way it's been is that the federal government regulates the vehicle. The state and local governments regulate the operation of that vehicle on public roadways. And under sort of conventionally driven vehicles, the states also regulate the driver, right? Mm-hmm. And so the question is, do we take that sort of wholesale and bring it to AVs? I think the answer is sort of, right? Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about the vehicle, I think there should be consensus around the federal government regulating the vehicle itself. We could talk, I think, in a moment about why that's so. I also think there's complete consensus, at least everybody that I've talked to, that the states and local governments should maintain responsibility for regulating the operation of AVs on public roadways. That's within their authority. When we get to the driver, it's obviously a little complicated because we're now not talking about a third entity, a human driver on the vehicle. We're actually talking about the vehicle driving itself, right? And the way I think about it, going back to why the federal government has regulated the vehicle, it's because it was out of a recognition that auto manufacturers could not be expected to manufacture different vehicles for different states, right? The complexity of that and the cost of that just made it an untenable outcome, right? So a decision was made that the federal government would regulate vehicles in that way. Manufacturers could make one vehicle and they could sell it in all 50 states, right? As I'm thinking about this is as the driver becomes the driver is the vehicle. The vehicle is the driver. That same sort of baseline argument applies, right? Like we cannot get into a situation now where manufacturer A has to manufacture a different vehicle for California that it manufactures for Massachusetts that it manufactures for Texas. And so as I'm thinking about this, I think that needs to be sort of in the same bucket as the vehicle, and that needs to be something that we defer to the federal government to for regulation.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I mean, for the wonks out there will know this term. I mean, this is about interstate commerce, right? And this is constitutional at the end of the day, which is that you can't be inhibiting the free flow of interstate commerce. And whenever you are regulating AVs or a vehicle in very different ways in different states, you shouldn't have to get out of, say, your car in California and between Nevada for a highway patrol officer to measure your bumper to make sure it's meeting, you know, Nevada standards.
Exactly.
And that's just not how commerce in this country has worked. And it's also incredibly inefficient. And what has made America such a economic powerhouse is the ability to, obviously, the free flow of goods and people has been essential. But it is the certainty that you will be treated effectively the same, your vehicle will be treated the same when you're driving from state to state. Right. Whether you're in a truck, whether you're in a car, whatever it is, it's that freedom of movement that you have.
Yeah. And I mean, and you know, the one thing I'll add, though, is that whole construct that we just laid out is sort of predicated on NHTSA and the federal government occupying the field, right, on the regulation of the vehicle. And that is, going back to, you know, what we're talking about a few minutes ago, that's what's unfortunately still lacking here, right? So we really do need NHTSA to, you know, occupy the field, so to speak, in that space to make it clear that they are exercising their authority and their responsibility, right, for vehicle regulation. And so all the more reason for them to continue the work that they've started and get it done as expeditiously as possible.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that we have not had a NHTSA administrator confirmed and staying there for a meaningful period of time for many, many years.
No doubt that continues to be a challenge. Yeah.
So in that void of federal, like meaningful federal regulation for AVs, have we seen any movement at the state level to perhaps implement a rulemaking that would, you know, contradict this interstate commerce principle that we have? Have we seen that pop up? Have those risks occurred?
Yeah, I think we've seen a few places where states have implemented some vehicle-related requirements. The one that comes to top of mind is in a couple of states, right? There's recording requirements for event data recorders or the, you know, equivalent for data that may be recorded in connection with a collision of some sort. There's been some specifications about how long of a recording that needs to be. That's the one that pops to mind. Out of the gate.
Right. Oh, and I think teleoperation as well. I think that
has happened. Yeah. I think you're right.
All right, Hillary, so let's turn to my favorite part of every podcast episode, which is our lightning round of fun questions.
Okay, let's do it.
What is the future of mobility?
Cleaner, safer, smarter.
That was pretty concise.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
That's also our tagline at Auto Innovators.
Okay.
Is that the bumper sticker, too?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so, and if that is the future of mobility, what is absolutely not the future of mobility?
Ooh, that's a good one. What is not the future of mobility? I don't know that I have an answer to that.
There's a lot riding on this question, Hillary.
I have nothing. Maybe it's a sign of my glass half full nature. I'm just thinking about like what can be and not what should be.
I love it. What is?
We are all so punchy.
Yeah, we're punchy. It's day three or four of the conference. I can't remember anymore.
I think it's day two.
Yeah. Well, it's Wednesday.
Three.
Day three.
Okay, it's day three.
Yeah.
It's day three.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so this is going to be probably a little controversial, but I'm going to say the future of mobility. I'm not talking about like tomorrow's future mobility. I'm talking about like 50 years from now, future mobility will not be human-driven vehicles. I really believe that at some point in the future, some of the very same safety advocates that are actually expressing concern and skepticism about AVs will be advocating that humans not be allowed to drive vehicles anymore.
Yeah, what a strange world that'll be.
Yeah, but I think it will happen.
What is your favorite fictional form of mobility?
I really am still holding out hope for like the Jetsons, like flying car-ish thing. Right? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I've seen the
like
Jetsons, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, although I feel like that's not really fictional, right? There's like a lot of work going into flying.
Yeah, there's the VTOL stuff happening right now. They need to talk to some planners, the VTOL people, but maybe they'll get there. Yeah.
But I'm excited for that.
Yeah, yeah. The dog and the robot maid.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Hillary, where can people find you online?
I am on Twitter still. I know, hard to believe, right? I'm still on Twitter at Hillary Kane DC. And then all of our work, the association's work, is obviously available on our website, which is autosinnovate.org.
Awesome. And we'll put all of that in the show notes. Thanks, Hillary, for joining us and powering through on the afternoon of the third, fourth, or fifth day, whichever one
Seven
it is.
Times.
Yeah.
We live here now.
Yeah, we live here now. Awesome. Well, thanks, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of the Mobility Podcast.